How you celebrate or don't celebrate your mom has a lot to do with the kind of relationship you have with her. And those relationships can change over time, sometimes in surprising ways. KALW's Julie Kane brings us this personal story about how she got to know her mom.
A few years ago, I got a phone call. It was about my mother. She had died suddenly. Her next-door neighbor found her slumped in the doorway of her apartment in Roanoke, Virginia. Although it had been 20 years since I last saw my mother, I was the next of kin, so it was up to me to decide what to do. I called the local mortuary, Oakey's. I chose cremation. It was the cheapest option. I didn't go to Virginia. I didn't attend the funeral. Someone else cleaned out her apartment. See, I never really knew my mother. She was a schizophrenic who ran off to join a cult, the Moonies, when I was a two-year-old. I only saw my mother a couple times after she left. She became little more than a concept to me, a disembodied voice on the phone, a ghost, even when she was alive. We didn't really start talking on the phone until I was 18 and out of the house. And our conversations usually had apocalyptic overtones. She warned me about the evils of sex and the end of the world. She'd call me at 5 o'clock in the morning, unaware of the time zone difference between East and West Coasts, and she'd start out by quoting a Bible verse about the perils of nursing a baby during Armageddon. "Julie, this is your mother. Julie, woe to the woman who gives suck in the end times, Julie." She wanted me to get married in one of the Reverend Sun Young Moon's mass weddings in Madison Square Garden, and she begged me never to have an abortion. My mother's name was Patricia Kane, but she was so into the Mooney doctrine that she legally changed her name so she wouldn't have the mark of Kane on her. She wanted me to do the same. After many years with the Moonies, they eventually kicked her out. She was too crazy for them to handle. So she wandered around the Deep South, still proselytizing door to door. An elderly couple recognized that she was in trouble and took her in and eventually got her back in touch with her family, some of whom were living in Roanoke, Virginia. She lived out the remainder of her life, 30-some years, in a Section 8 apartment in a poor section of Roanoke. A couple years after my mother died, I ended up in Roanoke with a microphone. I went to her old apartment and met up with her next-door neighbor, Carol Augebright.
Your mama was a great friend to me. We was always together, and I was always taking her places, and she was real good. She was a real good person. And I really miss them next door. I really miss your mom a whole lot.
And did you, you know, sit and visit over there? Did you go visit her?
We drank tea together, and sometimes she'd fix me a steak dinner and stuff like that. You know, just had a little dinner together because she didn't like going out much, you know.
Were you home on the day that she
passed? I was upstairs, and I heard the sirens, and I seen them pull up in front. And I said, well, something's happened. I didn't even take a shower or nothing. I just slipped on some clothes, and I went over there, and some woman that was helping her out, she was crying on the porch. She says, something's happened to Pat, and told me about it. And I just sat over there with her until Oakey's and the police come and everything, and I was the only one that stayed over there with her till Oakey's took her away, because I thought she needed that. I wanted to stay with her, and I was her only friend mostly at the time, so I stayed with her. I wanted to. That's why I miss her so much. I know you do too.
That's the thing. I didn't miss her. Or maybe her absence was so normal to me that her death just felt like more of the same. I don't know. But I liked Carol Augebright. I liked it that she'd known my mother as a real person, as a friend. I liked it that they'd had steak dinners together. Carol and I went to pick up her daughter, Jennifer, and we drove out to spend the afternoon with my mother's longtime companion, Fred.
Come here and let's meet Julie.
Hi, Julie. How are you? Good to see you.
See you too.
Hi,
I've been giving her some information.
My mother and Fred were a couple for 27 years.
How did you guys meet each other?
I think she had a pad and a paper. She got several calls and chose me.
You were the lucky one, huh?
Fred pulled out a box of photographs to show me, and we sat with Carol and her daughter looking at pictures.
They're fading, though, aren't they?
Well, it's what happens with those old pictures. They do.
She told me once she was a, one of those beauty queens at a high school.
Yeah, she did tell us.
Oh, I think she was a homecoming queen,
right?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah. She sat on the back of the car. She's telling me all about that.
My mother, a beauty queen on display on the back of a convertible. I don't have any pictures from that time in her life.
And did she talk much about me?
Yes. You was on her mind constantly. She said, she used to tell me, she says, I don't know if I'm going to ever have any grandchildren from Julie. She would say that. She says, I don't think she'll ever have me one, Carolyn.
And she'd say, I love my Julie.
Yeah, she love her Julie.
I love my Julie. Yeah.
Well, and she'd talk about you being talkative on the, well, she called it Christian radio. That's what she told me. She says, that's my daughter. She turn it up when we go over there. She'd make me sit and listen. You know, she's like, that's my daughter. I'm so proud of her.
Well, not Christian radio exactly, but still.
Did she ever say why she, you know, why I didn't live with her or why she didn't live with me? She ever
told me that she went in a hospital when you was 2 years old because she couldn't handle you or something.
Yeah.
Because it was on her nerves or something. And she said she hated to leave, but she had to leave because she just couldn't take a two-year-old.
I thought none of this mattered to me. I'm an only child, and I'd always thought of myself as someone without any real biological family, as if I were adopted or hatched from an egg. But my mother was the oldest of six kids. Her younger brother, Tommy Provo, a born-again Christian, was living with his wife in a trailer in the Moonshine Hills outside Roanoke. I went to visit them next.
I said, this is just a little memorial area that we started. Tommy's mom was the first one, and then my grandmother and my father. And then that's your mom right there with the angel.
Wow. I did that yesterday. I finally finished it. The angel, because when Pat was a little girl, I heard a story about her putting on angel wings, and she tried to fly off some steps. So that angel was really appropriate for her.
Tommy and his wife took me inside and pulled out some photos and papers for me.
That was her cremation.
She was doing so well.
She was getting better, you know, mentally and stuff.
That it was such a shock.
Kind of finally getting some peace in her life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She'd stay in her stupid apartment for months on end, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not good for anybody, you know.
But
she'd think the people upstairs were talking about her, and just weird stuff, you know. I felt really sorry for her, but, I mean, there's nothing you can do for her.
She was hard to be around.
I really, truly believe she had, a mental illness, you know, like a schizophrenia.
Oh, I'm not downplaying that at all. I just think it was brought on by the birth of the baby.
The birth of the baby. That's me. Later that afternoon, on my way back to my motel, I got lost. I pulled over so I could consult a map, and when I looked up, I realized that I was parked exactly in front of Oki's funeral home, where I'd sent my mother to be cremated. There was no one around, and I got out and took a picture. "Hi, Mom," I said out loud. I got back in my car and headed down the highway. Again, I got lost, and again, I pulled over. When I got out of the car to stretch my legs, I looked up. I had stopped right under a giant billboard that said, "Aren't you glad your mother didn't choose abortion?" It was just like another one of those 5 a.m. phone calls I used to get from her, bizarre and relentlessly on message. A final word from her to me from the great beyond. "Yeah," I said, "I am glad. Thanks, Mom."
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
How's that?
Beautiful. It's so beautiful. I love that song so much.